Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I'm your host Stephen Murphy. I'm joined by the regular rugby crew that is Westy and Sam. We are back for Six Nations recap. It is what, round four is in the books. The penultimate round, I believe that's the word that's used for second last. We are one round away and it's still all to play for. We'll get into all the action, but first of all we'll go around with the lads, check in on them. Westy, JW, how are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I was home in Ballinagh for a few days last week, which is great. I got to hang out with my nephews for a little while. We had a match ourselves yesterday, so unfortunately we lost, which is never fun. But I was off work today, so that kind of made everything. I got to wallow in my self-pity for a whole day without having any work distractions. So that's always a win, you know?
Definitely. I was actually at your game. So maybe you can blame me, maybe, for the loss.
Yeah, you're bad.
I think I've been to two games and he's lost both. But I don't know. It was really fun to be at. I enjoyed it immensely. He's both played really well. I thought he's both played fantastically. I thought the game, it was a good tight game. Last kick of the game got his, unfortunately, which is always a sign of a good game. But that's sport for you. Congratulations to the Galwegians.
Just explain the kick.
So yeah, as obviously when you're in the stands of a J3JC, what is it, J2C?
J2C.
No, it's J2A. It's below J1C. There is no J2C.
J2.
There is technically a J1 or J2B. There's no J2C.
Oh, right. So
J2A game. There's no clock. There's no big, you know, clock that I can see. So we knew it was coming towards the end of the game. I knew that it was a draw because I was keeping the score in my head because, you know, maths. And then I see all of a sudden, I don't even know if there was a penalty advantage to the Norwegians team or not, but goes back to the 10. He tries a drop goal from 20 meters out. I mean, nearly misses the ball. Not a good strike. It goes high left, and unfortunately, the winger for Corinthians kind of got stuck under the ball. The ball goes over his head, so by the time he turns around, the ball bounces back behind him again, so he has to turn around again. And by that stage, in fairness to the Galwegians player, you know, he wasn't standing on his laurels. He reacted, came in, got the ball, touched it down for the game-winning try. Game's over, clock on the red. You know, pandemonium in the crowd. But that's that level of sport, you know. It's unpredictable. I was going to say afterwards, he probably would have rather lost to a nice, cleanly struck drop goal than actually what happened in the end.
Probably. But it was a semi-final as well, so it was actually, we were hoping to gather that and kick it out and it'd be just, you know, onto extra time and kind of reevaluate where we were because we were a bit under the cash for a while. And then, yeah, that it was just so unfortunate. The bounce of a rugby ball, but I watched it back. I saw it on Instagram and fair play to me, man, who followed it up because the rest of his team turned around to congratulate the kicker. He was the only lad who followed it up. And you say it week in, week out in training, follow balls, gamble on it, go for it, play the whistle. And, you know, very few actually do it at our level. So the lad who does it gets rewarded. So fair play to him. Like, it's sickening for us, but it's a good lesson for us all to kind of just follow everything.
I do want to highlight Sam laying the smack down the first half. Sam's on the wing. Ball came out. This poor Galwegians player got melted with an amazing tackle, Sam. I know you were kind of wincing afterwards. The shoulder wasn't great, but it was a big hit. Big hit.
I thought I was going to have to come off. It eased up, but it was fine now. But it was such a stinger. I was like, oh, Jesus. I got one of them in me. I'm like a prime Rodney Ayew. I got one big hit in me, and then I'm useless for the rest of the game.
And also, I didn't know Westy was David Pocock in a past life. He was just a jackal monster. No rook is safe. Westy's in on it. I loved it. It was great to see Westy. Loose hamstrings is all I could tell you, because you were bent.
I have the KT tape, and that's why I'm so covered in tape. The KT tape down my hamstrings so I can get that extra bend.
That extra couple inches means all the difference. No, it's good. I need to go to more games. I know it's the end of the season now, but it was fun. It was an enjoyable day. My weekend, I went down to Loughrea to watch the Irish game. I do a local radio show down in Loughrea, a sports show. Lads have been trying to do a Christmas party since Christmas and nothing's ever worked, so eventually we decided this Saturday was the one. So we went down to McNamee's. Great pub, great, like, place was buzzing. A great crowd, like old and young. It was definitely a bit of crack. And but they're playing zombie again. I haven't had a positive zombie experience yet. I didn't get it at the World Cup because we lost, and then we were playing before the England game, and as we'll get to, the lost. So I don't know. I need a positive zombies experience outside of just it coming on the radio. But yeah, Sam, anything else noteworthy from your weekend?
I went to the Athlone musical. It's a musical called Your Own Town. It's one of my favorite, and everyone was class. It was a brilliant musical. It's a mental show about a post-apocalyptic world where they charge you to take a whiz in public amenities because there's such a water shortage. It's a bit of crack, and the whole show was brilliant. So fair play to everyone who was involved in that. I was, because we had our own match, not drinking at the after party, so I tailed it pretty quickly home for some toast and tea before bed. But yeah, no, good weekend. I had a long weekend because my school is a polling station. That's an
Ooh,
upside.
another day off for a teacher. Ooh, we're all pumped for that. So happy for you, Sam. Okay, let's get stuck into the action. First of that, we'll get into the Fantasy Six Nations League that we're still doing. I'm now second last, and the only person below me is someone who obviously isn't doing it because they're on like 100 points, and I'm on 1,000. So I have stopped doing it. But Westy up 8 places this week to 49th. Are you still trying, Westy, or is this just luck?
No, I'm still trying.
All right, okay. I wasn't sure.
I've made some shocking decisions. I had Ollie Lawrence for the first game and the third game, and he got me, I think, a total of 7 points, and I dropped him for this game. Anyway, and I dropped James Lowe because I was like, oh, it's going to be a tighter game than that. You know, there's not going to be a lot of that. I was like, got Gibson Park over Lowe because I was like, this is a sure thing. And then Gibson Park ends up on the wing and then full back and all over the place. So, yeah, but tell you who got me great points, and it will lead into what we're talking about next. Menoncello.
Oh,
That was
we
an
will get into
inspired pick.
that.
The only thing,
That
wait, I could have
was.
gone Bears if I picked Brex.
Yeah. We'll go to our top five. Some changes here, some big changes. In fifth, down two spots, Anne and Owen's combined 15. In fourth, up two spots, the very Spanish sounding Miguel Vidal. In third, up one spot, is Yipi Traoré, Mother Rucker. I'll not lie, I am pulling for you just because of your name. In second, up seven spots, and this is where the lack of creativity annoys me. It's just the letter T. That's the name of the team. I mean, you got Yipi Traoré, Mother Rucker trying its best over here, and in second spot is T.
What does it stand for,
So,
though? Tig
I
burn,
mean,
fry,
maybe
time.
it's a question.
Imagine
T?
T.
No, there's no
I'd love a
question
cup of tea
mark.
if someone's
There's
making
no
it.
question mark there.
Maybe it's in reference to that Eddie Jones clip.
Oh yeah, get the fucking T's out, mate. And first, what, 65 points ahead, and still in first place is Asti. I don't know how you pronounce it. But they had a good week. Looking at their team here, Thomas Ramos got them a lot of points. That Ben Earl, who obviously raked in the points. Their captain was Van der Merwe, and their super sub was Kelleher, who got them 24 points. But yeah, good scoring again there. So again, well done to all involved. One round to go. We'll see who comes out on top. All right, let's get stuck into the rugby, and we have to start with the first game on Saturday. Italy, Scotland in the Stadio Olimpico. A lot of actual buzz this week going in, the thinking that Italy could genuinely get the win here. I was skeptical just because of the massive data sample that we have of Italy losing. It's been over 11 years since they won at home. So, you know, forgive me for getting that one wrong, Italian fans. But Scotland up 22 points, 16 at the half. And Italy storm back to a 31 points, a 29 win. Their first win, as I said, at home. In 11 years, I think it is, or I can't remember exactly what year.
2013, I mean, yeah.
2013, so yeah, 11 years. The first win since they beat Wales, what was that, 2 years ago? I mean, amazing emotions at the end. I'm delighted that that win came at home because the fans obviously were just so into it. And Westy, I have to throw it to you. I think you're our biggest Italian fan on this podcast. We're all Italian fans, but you live and breathe by it.
I'm definitely not an Italian fan.
You're no, okay, we'll get into
No,
that in a few
I
minutes.
hate
The
it. No,
beef.
I don't. Don't.
No, who could possibly hate the Italians? Wesley,
Don't
yeah,
like the food. I think it's overrated.
no result could have made you happier than seeing Italy get this long awaited win. And talk us through your emotions at the time. Where were you? Talk us through it.
Yeah, so I was watching it at home with my dad, which was funny because my dad was gonna look at me at one point. He was like, do you have an Italian relative I don't know about? Like, because I was getting quite into it, especially I think I spent the last 10 minutes on my feet. Yeah, you said it as well. I want to mention it first. It's the Italian fans, like, credit to them. Like, I know a lot of us who want to see Italy succeed have kind of, you know, you can think at times it's wishful thinking, but have been seeing this win coming for a while. You know, even going back to beating Wales 2 years ago, they've been so much more competitive since they got that result. And I did think at the time, and you know, it's kind of been proven now, and hopefully it continues. I think it will. these wins, you know, the ending of the drought kind of inspired more wins, you know. And again, they would have taken a lot of confidence as well, because like last season, 2 minutes before the end, they were camped on the Scottish line with a chance to win it, and then it turned over and Scotland ran the pitch. So, you know, we all know that that final score didn't really reflect how the game went. But yeah, credit to the Italian fans who've waited for this for so long. Like we know that soccer obviously dominates rugby in terms of fandom in Italy, but anytime you meet Italian fans, like, they're never bitter about Italy losing. They're never jaded. They're never like, oh, why bother? Like, you're going to... Stadio Olimpico was pretty much sold out, I think, at the weekend. The ticket sales have been unreal for this year. Now, again, like, right, some of that does come from the win 2 years ago and the improved results, but the kind of underperforming at the World Cup doesn't seem to have really hampered that dedication. And, like, I know the majority of those fans have been sticking by Italy for, you know, 10, 12 years without wins, you know, and they've continued to be fantastic hosts. I went to Rome for a game. It's gone back maybe 6 or 7 years ago now, but... I went with my dad and my brothers, and we were talking about the weekend maybe going again next year, because we had such a good time and the Italians were such good hosts to us when we were there. So that win is, as you said, I'm so glad it came in Rome, because it is for the fans. It's for the people who have stuck by this team, the fans who didn't travel to Wales, not because they didn't think that Italy could win a game, but because, you know, maybe for whatever reason, they, you know, not everybody can travel abroad for every fixture. You know, it's a luxury at the end of the day. I'm so glad it came. When at the start of Six Nations, I thought this was a game they could win, but with the way Scotland had been playing, I thought it would be a step too far. I thought Italy would be competitive for a while, and I thought Scotland would keep the scoreboard ticking over, because, you know, in the way they kind of played against England and against France, you know, okay, France, they kind of let that game get away from them, but in the way, and the Wales game in the second half, they were very poor, but they were good at building scores for large parts of the Six Nations, although they left massive gaps where they didn't build scores, so maybe that's not the best analogy, but yeah, I thought maybe it was going to be a step too far for Italy, but like, what a comeback, you know, like to be 12, 14, 3 down, 12, 3 down, 10 minutes gone, like... Scotland got the third try with 20 minutes. We all thought this was, you know, I was like, oh God, this could get ugly, you know. Now, Italy were playing okay. I was like, they'd get a couple of scores, but I was thinking it'd be more similar to a Wales-France scoreline, that it'd be, you know, it'd be 40-20 or something at the final score. But in fairness to them, you know, they came out of the second half firing. Scotland a little bit unlucky to have the try chalked off. It is obstruction, but Ross Vincent, you know, he should have been nominated last night for an Oscar for his performance there for going down. You know, he really made it visible, gave a yelp and dived on the ground to show what happened. But yeah, just like, I was really proud of Italy for getting the win. I thought they'd been playing better than the scorelines had given them so far. And like, we really breezed over last week what an achievement it was to get the draw in France. We all were like, oh, they should have got the win and France have fallen down. But to go to France and get that draw was an unbelievable result for Italy. And to back that up now this week was really good. Now, they're far from perfect. I actually thought their defence in the first half was really poor, where in France they had this amazing goal line defence. They withstood 20 minutes of solid pressure. I didn't think they had it in them in the early stages of the first half, because they seemed to be conceding quite lightly. But it shows a lot of heart, a lot of passion, a lot of skill, a lot of maturity in the team to come out at halftime and understand what has to be done and to follow through. And I think it's a really good time to be an Italy fan.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. What I took from the game was that, like, it wasn't like Scotland just laid an egg and were awful. Like, Italy just were better on the day and deserved the win. Now, was I nervous towards the end when they went, well, 8 points up and Scotland score within like 2 or 3 minutes of that? I was like, oh, here we go again. And that final 3 minutes or 4 minutes where they went 20 something phases was as exciting, like, that is as exciting as sport will get in my eyes, in terms of, it's literally one error from elation and absolute heartbreak for both teams. And Italy's discipline in those 20 something phases, I mean, that is not something that we've said about Italy before, where, like, their discipline has been fantastic. Like, I was expecting a penalty at any stage, and Scotland were going to break all of our hearts, not just Italian hearts. And it was just amazing to see. But, like, we have to consider as well, like, what's next for Italy? Because we've seen this before, where they bet Wales 2 years ago, and they didn't really push on in terms of... They probably got better, I'm not saying that, but they didn't get another win until now in the Six Nations. But, like, Sam, you look at that team, and, like, there's a lot of incredibly good players in that team. Like, you look even the back line, you know, Pedrello, Garbisi, Ione, Menoncello at centre, who is absolutely incredible. Brex, outside centre. Louis Lina scoring on his debut. And then obviously Caputo, who is, you know, world class in any every sense of the word. That's a properly good back line. Not to mention Negri, Lamaro at seven. Like, there's some really good players here. There's no reason why Italy shouldn't kick on and get a few more of these. I don't want to call them scalps, but, like, you know, more routine wins, right? Like, that's what we want to see here. We don't want to see another 2 years for another win.
I think with the kind of the push on from Treviso and Zebre to an extent as well, they look like they've been building. We've been hearing for 20 odd years that they've been building. When I was joking earlier when I said I'm not a fan of Italy, I still maintain that there should be conversations around promotion and relegation. And I think this win is a fantastic achievement for them, and it shows a lot of exceptional work across the board, and especially from the new coach coming in, as a Quesada coming in. You know, to be able to turn it around the way he has after the World Cup has been phenomenal. He has a squad there. They have a squad of mix of experience and youth, really good quality players playing at the highest level. And in the URC, they're not the cannon fodder either. So all of their URC players are also playing at a high level, not just the ones in France and England. So it is all equaling in a great scenario for them. They need to back it up a little bit. I think that if they're pulling up the floor of the Six Nations and the ceiling is coming down a little bit, squishing and condensing the group a bit so that you don't have an outright Grand Slam winner, which I said I didn't want this year and we're not going to get. And if you don't have a wooden spoon, no wins team in the tournament every year, that's probably as good as you can kind of hope, because one criticism of them has been in the last while that they've been progressing at a steady rate, but the other teams around them have been progressing at an even faster rate. So for them to catch up and to get, you know, two wins in the last 3 years, the Wales and the Scotland one, to bring it, to make themselves competitive in games, to get that draw against France, all of those need to be built on. And to try and get, I know you said you don't like using the word scalp, but I think it is still going to be scalps for another couple of years until they get routinely two or three wins and kind of solidify themselves in mid-table. And then when you're solidified in mid-table, you can drop down a year. You can be last in it for a year, but it's not going to be the same conversation all same old Italy if you've done it for a year or two, not been dead last. So it's a hard place for them to be because of the progression of the teams around them, but they are progressing really well. And the everything on the ground seems to be working as well. That, like, the club teams seem to be thriving at the moment. Their player acquisition seems to be very smart. They're bringing in Italian qualified players. They're also supplementing their teams with non-Italian player qualified players. So everything, I think, is, I think, pointing in the right direction for them. It would be a shame now if they went next year's Six Nations and not got a win, which is entirely possible. And then it starts that conversation again for people like me that want to see a promotion and relegation brought in. I still believe that that's the case. I don't want an automatic, you know, I was never in the camp of get rid of Italy, bring in South Africa, or get rid of Italy, bring in someone else. I think that competition needs competition. I like the idea of promotion relegation. I think the URC probably needs similar at some point as well. That should be the thriving goal for all competition. But this is a step in the right direction. Hopefully they build on it. And I don't see why they wouldn't. Someone made the point online that they're much fitter looking this year. And Wesley, your point about them kind of dropping off after 60 minutes in the past, that doesn't seem to be the case as much here. You saw last week the defensive stands against France. Even the defensive stand at the end of this one, their defense in the first half wasn't as good, but they kept Duan quiet. And then they stood up when needs be, and their discipline was amazing. There's only five penalties conceded. At one point, it was 10-4 in penalties from Scotland to Italy. So it's all been exceptional for them, and I hope to see them grow on it and to cause more upsets for the moment, and then just to be a regular team that gets a couple of wins.
It's not just, in fairness, I haven't said that consistently in about 2 years. I think since they got the win against Wales, they have been an 80-minute team. They've just not had whatever extra get over the line. I think a lot of the base work was laid by Kieran Crowley. He got them confident and excited to play with the ball, got them playing this beautiful, expansive style of rugby. And then what Caseda has done coming in is marry that with a strategic kicking game and discipline that gets them into the right positions and you know, gives them opportunity to take those points. One thing that's annoyed me throughout the week is people saying that Italian qualified Louis Lina. His mother is Italian. He was born in Treviso. He lived there till he was five. He is Italian. Arguably, that is the country he has the most right to play for. He went to school in England, grew up in England, perfectly entitled to play for them. Father Australian, perfectly entitled to play for them. But he's not this bizarre acquisition, this loophole in the law that they got. Like, his His grandparents still live in Treviso. Him and his brother, who was playing for Queensland Reds the weekend, were both born in Treviso. The other point I want to make is, and people have been saying this anecdotally for the last few years, but I think you're really going to start to see it now. The Italian under 20s and under 18s have been winning for the last few years. The under 20s beat France the week before. They hockeyed Scotland on Friday night. They beat South Africa during the summer, I think. They beat England in the last Six Nations. And marry that with the fact that Treviso are winning games now, and they have a couple of players in top five France. In 2 or 3 years, if they can keep it, I don't even think they have to win a game next year, right? If they can stay competitive next year, in a couple of years, they will have a team that is not used to losing, because losing is a habit. And that is definitely a thing of the players who went by, went through that 7 year drought of wins. Like, when you're facing that every year, when you're facing this uphill struggle, when that barrier isn't broken for so long, it's difficult to see how you're going to do it. Whereas now, if you're establishing the fact that, yes, they can win at home against Scotland, they are going to Millennium Stadium next week to win that game. They fully back themselves. They will want a cut of France next year in Rome. They will see that as a winnable game. As you get these 20s coming up, these guys who have won games, that squad is going to grow in confidence and grow in skill. And I think if it's done, a lot of this is, and I will credit Conor O'Shea with the mechanisms he put in place as coach for the youth system, a lot of it's paying off. But that's why I say it's a really exciting time to be an Italian fan right now. I don't think I get frustrated, like last year, and people are like, oh, I mean, they lost all the games this year. It's like, yes, but they were so much more competitive than they've been the years before. I think you have to put it in context. You have to put these performances in context, and you have to put this win in context. It's a difficult thing. Everyone else is getting free rein because they've got new coaches who started 2 years ago. Like, Gonzalo Quesada has done so much in the 3 or 4 months that he's been there. I'm really excited to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, I think next week is important. The performance that they do put in next week is important, because if they go out now next week and get bet well against Wales, it will be disappointing. I hope that, as I said, they don't have to win necessarily, but just as you said, Westy, be competitive. But like we could be looking at a 3-win Italy this year. Like, they lost by 3 points to England and they drew to France. Like, they could have 3 wins on this board, which is, I know, like, ifs and buts, but like I'm saying, it wasn't like they were miles away. Like, they literally drew with France and should have bet them by the penalty at the end. And England, sure, who knows what would have happened in that game if other things went their way. And they're sitting third on the table. Like, it's crazy. Like, and some years that probably will happen, where it's like 1 win every now and then they'll just win three, and it'll be, the new Italy era.
Yeah, that's just my point, though. I think about the wins next year's. I've said it a couple of years in a row, whereas like they get complimented for being plucky and for being competitive a lot, and then they do go through a year or two of it not coming to fruition. I want to see more regular wins from them, because you don't want to lose this opportunity that they have there. I don't think it's the be all and end all to not win a game next year, but I for their development, like Wesley makes some great points, but you have to bring that 20s into a team that's ready for them as well. And you wouldn't want to see them go back to the team that we just compliment for being in the fight. You don't want to see them continue to get these wins. And I think this, your point there, like, this could be 3 wins. It could be four now, because they will have an eye on Wales. They'll want to finish ahead of Wales. They'll want to make a statement. And that will be huge. But when you make statements, you do need to kind of back them up. And if it may be that they're only competitive next year and they don't get a win, they're competitive in all their fixtures, and that's great. But if it's 2 or 3 years of only being competitive in your fixtures, that's when you start to have to question it again. So I think that they will be hell bent on trying to get another win or two. Finishing ahead of Wales would be absolutely monumental for them.
Yeah, agreed. We can touch briefly on Scotland. This was a very much a Scotland, a typical Scotland loss, considering especially the Irish result. The cat would have been really amongst the pigeons now heading into next weekend, and still is to a degree, but they could have been on similar points to us, if not the same points, and they lose to Italy. Again, taking nothing away from Italy, fully deserved, but Scotland will be kicking themselves big time. Speaking of kicking themselves, we'll move on to the next game, which was England versus Ireland at Twickenham, and England come out on top by a point, 23 points to 22. And we saw some hot take reactions. We saw some people very, very upset over the result of this game. And we're going to get stuck into it now. And I think I will hold my hands up. I did not see this result coming. I thought Ireland are the far better team. They are the far better team. England deserved this win fully. England were absolutely outstanding all game. Again, plenty of opportunities to fold, especially that early that second half when Ireland get that try, having played very little rugby, and they go up by whatever it was, 8 or 9 points. Very easy for England to fold there, and they didn't. They came back, they played all the rugby, they dominated nearly every aspect of the game, and deserved winners at the end. And actually, to be honest with you, I'm never going to be happy for an England win, just want to make that sure. But I could see the sense of joy in English players. It's been a tough couple of months and years, and they, you know, they deserved a win like that. Someone made a great point. Six Nations needed a weekend like this, where Italy win and Ireland lost. Because, I mean, I just want to clear this up too. Ireland are clear and away the best team in this competition. I mean, look at the table, bar the results. Like, Ireland are on an 80-point plus difference points. England are minus -3. And they sit second. So that's the gap that has been that big in games. But this is why we love sport. Ireland were 12-point favourites going into this, deservedly so, playing some outrageously good rugby, and they could not get it in. They could not get out of second gear. A lot of that was down to a lot of stuff England did, and we'll get stuck in that in a second. But this is, you know, Ireland are not robots. They are not just going to show up and be A-plus performers every week. That's not how sport works. That's not how the world works. And I will say the two losses Ireland have had in the last while have been an amazing performance from New Zealand, that the best performance they've had in 2 or 3 years, to beat us by whatever it was, 5 or 4, and England playing an A-plus game and Ireland playing a D-plus game, and they've still beat us by a point. So I just don't want to overreact to this Ireland loss. We're not all of a sudden a bad team. I did laugh at the person asking for us to revoke Conor Murray's Irish passport. We shouldn't, but I did laugh at it. That was quite a giggle for me. But yeah, we need to get stuck into that decision as well, because people are losing their minds over it. And for once, I'm on the side of Conor Murray and box kicks. Who'd have thought that was possible? But initial reactions, I suppose, Sam, will come to you first of all. Obviously surprised, I'd say, by the result, but like, what was your feelings watching this game?
I thought when we got ahead at halftime and when we got ahead with a couple of minutes to go, we would have enough because of what we've shown in the last 2 or 3 years that we can do, and we can see our games. We are a better team than teams on the pitch. Execution was poor. Decision was right. I agree with you with Conor Murray. I just think it was a bad kick. I think, you know, maybe trying to get someone else to kick it a bit further, or you just kick it a bit further or something, was the right thing to do. I just think it was a bad kick. And then there was 2 missed tackles as well then. Overall, Ireland were beaten on the pitch and outsmarted. I think England came with a game plan we haven't seen. I don't believe it's going to be a game plan that they're going to continuously use from now on. I don't think that they're going to they might find some middle ground between where they've been playing and how they're playing and how they played in that game. But I think this was a passion-filled game at home, an England team that really wanted the win because it would revolutionise and galvanise the entire squad and the entire structure and what was there and the belief in the team and the coaches and stuff. Much like Ireland had a big win against England a couple of years ago, and it changed kind of the idea and what Farrell was doing and the buy-in from the fans and all of those things. That could be this could be the making of this English team. It'd be yet to be seen. I think that they'll fall somewhere into the middle, really. I don't have that much faith in Borthwick, but I was impressed with what they did. I thought that they were excellent, and I thought that some of the players came through, like the Ollie Lawrences and the Faye Owobosos, they were phenomenal on the day. We were possibly blighted a little bit by the 6-2 because of what happened to Nash early on, but I don't want to blame that because I think the 6-2 has more merit than it has downside, and I believe that it is the go-forward play. Ireland are in a funny position because a point was made. I was on Caelan's rugby pod, and forgive me who made the point. It was a brilliant point, but it was like 6-2 is actually going to be the way forward because a lot of teams are just playing out halves at full back. So you have that there, and we don't have that. And Frawley was our out half at full back sub. But realistically, if you're looking at all fit there and the team that was on it, you probably kind of want Ringrose on the bench there because he's just the better player and you would have liked him for longer. But that's not a blame. There's no blame on that. I'm just saying it's a circumstance of the game. England will be they'll be delighted with the result. The drop goal to win it was amazing. They'll be delighted with the performance. If you're looking at it with like the most unemotional take, they had the extremely kickable advantage on our try line, the second one, and they hit the drop goal to win it. Would they have preferred to have pushed on and tried, you know, the unlimited phases you get when you have advantage that close to the line to get the bonus point that they would have gotten if they scored the try, which would have brought them 3 points behind Ireland instead of four in the table. Going into the weekend, it would have been a better situation to be in. But all in all, I think that they're, yeah, no, the what it will do for England is huge, and it's not worth overreacting to as an Ireland fan. It takes the best performance in 4 years for England and the best performance in 4 years for New Zealand to beat us in the last 2 years. That's it. That's a phenomenal result. Going away to Twickenham is never going to be easy, and I thought that from day one. I also said before the Six Nations that I didn't want a Grand Slam. I'd like Ireland to win it without a Grand Slam, because I think it would be better for the tournament that you don't have these Grand Slams 4 out of every 6 years. Have it once in every 4 years, and it's a really special occasion, and you go, that is an amazing team that has done something incredible. But if it just becomes second nature, it becomes like people are throwing around, oh, it's a bit of a letdown to win the championship or to be in with the chance to win the championship this weekend and it not be a Grand Slam. It's like, is it fuck? Winning two championships in a row is winning two championships in a row. Sport isn't undefeated. That's not how sport works. Teams lose. Teams have purple patches. You shouldn't be able to go full seasons undefeated. It's just, it doesn't sit right with me. So I'm a little bit happy now that there's so much to play for next weekend, because I think it makes for a much more interesting tournament.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, there's a reason it hasn't been done in the Six Nations era, the back-to-back Grand Slams, because it's fucking tough. And teams, you know, England are still a decent team, even though they're not performing well, or that they still have capable players. Before I throw to US, I do want to also say, like, a lot of people coming out about how cocky Ireland have been and the smugness and all that. That's just been the media. I feel like the Irish team have been quite, like, Andy Farrell isn't smug. Andy Farrell isn't coming out being like, oh, I can't wait to hockey England. This, like, that's not happening. You know, he's not coming out and saying that. The players, they might not be the most likable players. I'm just trying to think from out of Ireland perspective. But I wouldn't call them cocky or smug. They're definitely confident. But I don't think that's been an issue. Again, I love the reaction of the players. There was no tantrums. There was no, it was just kind of like, yep, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. On to the next one, try and beat Scotland. And I think that's a testament again to Ireland. Westy, again, I think a lot of people are overreacting to the loss. One area in particular I do think we need to talk about is the line out again. I feel like that has been a major part of the downfall of Ireland's losses to New Zealand and now against England. It seems to be the one area where Ireland are the most inconsistent or the most gettable. I don't know if that's the best term, but do you feel the same? Is that an area where we need to still tighten up a little bit, even more so than the scrum, is where teams tend to attack us?
Although I'm trying to remember now exactly, I don't think exactly how bad our line-out was throughout the game. I think we only lost one of our own, according to the stats that I saw. I guess one thing, and it goes back to the Murray kick, right? Now, I'd be in the camp that we should have been kicking as far as possible, not kicking for touch. We should have been pinning them back in the corner. I do agree. Playing out of our own 22, like 90 seconds is a long time. Also, they don't know, well, they can see the time and the clock, but, you know, they don't know exactly, you know, the ref often says, you know, my watch, not the stadium clock, you know. I think our defensive lineout wasn't really as good. I mean, two or three years ago, we were jumping up and stealing balls for fun. We were unbeatable in a lineout, and now that doesn't seem to happen as much. And I also think not just our defensive lineout in terms of the lineout, but if you watch that last lineout, our defense is so slow to come up to England. And I think now partly that's credit to England, because they've been barreling at us all day, and I think that we're kind of a little bit camera shy. But our defence off the back of an opponent's line-out wasn't kind of at the level that it has been in other games. Now, like, whatever reason, you can put that down to the overall sluggishness of the team, if that's the way you see it. I'm going to give England a bit more credit here and say that it's because of the way the game went. I think the scrum is a bit more of a problem, if I'm honest. I think the line-out needs to improve, but it's not dire. As I say, we only lost one of our own. I think it's our defensive mindset at times in that game worries me a little bit. Our positioning, our kind of our aggressiveness, and I guess that's the problem when you're facing a kind of blitz defense. You get used to maybe seeing it in a different way, so maybe you're not quite as aggressive off the line. Maybe we were a little bit too complacent in what we thought England were going to bring. We thought it was predictable what they were going to do, and we weren't able to capitalize on it. Yeah, I thought there was also kind of other uncharacteristic errors. I mean, there was a lot of drop balls, but when we got through a gap, we were dropping balls, knocking them on. I've said it before about Italy, right? And, you know, you see it all the time where someone drops a ball and they kind of stop and look at it. which I saw happen in the Ireland game, and I haven't seen that, an Ireland team do that in years. Like, we were always playing the whistle, playing the ball, dive on a grenade type thing, and that just, again, maybe I'm misremembering it, but it just did, that didn't seem to be the attitude at the weekend. So I think there was that little bit extra. What did I say the other day? Last week I said something like, this Ireland team love the on-scene work. Everybody wants to do that job they don't get credit for. It's, you know, that's a real thing. I can't remember exactly what I said, but I was trying to refer to the fact that nobody thinks anything is underappreciated. Everything is done for the team, and that's it. Which that just didn't seem to be the attitude of the weekend. So in things like, yeah, the defensive line out, like the last one, we don't get anybody up to compete against it. Now there is a bit of a fake at the front. I think we're ready to go to the front, and we don't, and then they win it. But again, the aggressiveness in defense, and then the kind of sloppy areas that we don't normally see. I just think there was a lack of that clinical mindset, and I think maybe that's more visible in the lineup. But I would also say that our scrumming has, I think, actually decreased in effectiveness more so than the lineup.
Why do you think that is?
It's really easy to throw it at Andrew Porter and say that he started to get called for something he was doing illegally. I'm not overly technical enough to talk through the ins and outs of it. I know he tends to bore in. We've seen twice now in the last few games, Peter O'Mahony like reaching a hand to hold somebody up in the front row. Maybe that's a sign of a lack of trust from there. You've got McCarthy in the second row, who's a new locked international level, and you know, maybe the news of, what's that phrase, the news of his success was wildly exaggerated. Maybe it is going to take a little bit more time. And you know, I know Tadhg Furlong's been had an awful year and stuff personally, but you know, he's getting kind of back towards the form he's been at, but maybe not at the same level. So I think there's, I don't think it's one thing. I think there's a few little things that are changing. I'm not saying it needs to involve massive change in the starting lineup, but I think it really requires a little bit more of returning to basics, being able to lock out a scrum, and you know, have those great strike plays off the back of it that we used to have. You know, we're still well capable of it. Just doesn't seem like we're giving ourselves the platform to do it anymore.
There's some drilling going on in the background here. I hope that's not being picked up by the bank. But Sam, you mentioned kind of what England do from now on. Does this change how you feel about the Irish team? Are we maybe not as good as we thought we were, or is that not changed for you?
No, it's not changed for me. I don't think I never thought we were maybe as good as the previous couple of games in the Six Nations had gone, because France were just a basket case, and getting an away result in France is always an amazing thing. But when they're a basket case and they're drawing with Italy, maybe it's put in context. We beat South Africa in the World Cup. I don't think we're overly far away from that. We're not bringing too many new players into the fold. We haven't done as many changes or brought through as many debutants as anyone else in the Six Nations. But I think we're still in a little bit of transition in terms of you got Sexton leaving. You've got some of the old guard maybe kind of moving on. You've got some new lads like Joe McCarthy who were involved before, or Calvin Nash who were involved before, who are getting more game time. So there's all those elements to add up. And like we saw at the end of the Joe Schmidt era, teams work out how to play you. And I think Andy Farrell is good enough a coach to work out a new system. You know, if teams work out how to play you, work out what you're doing well, work out ways to beat you, you have to work something out to counteract that. And I think that Farrell is doing that. So this Six Nations, we're still in the driving seat to win it. It's still going to be an amazing achievement. If we do win it, to win two in a row, it will still have been an amazing couple of years. I don't think we're far away. I think Crowley has to kind of learn the ropes a little bit. You know, he's an excellent player and he had some great moments, but he's still very green in terms of his experience as a top test level out half. And if you're going to build and develop teams around young players and bring through young players like himself and Joe McCarthy, you have to give them that little bit of time, and you have to allow the team and the whole way that you play, because you're playing differently to how you played for the previous 15 years. You have to allow that time. So I don't think that this is drastic. I don't think this is a bad result. This is an amazing England performance against all odds. You know, no one thought that they had this performance in them, and I thought that to a man they were all excellent. It was a poor day at the office for Ireland, probably brought on by how good and England were, and took them a bit by surprise. But like I said a bit earlier, it's taken the best performance England have had in 4 years and the best performance New Zealand had in 2 or 3 years to get results against us, and that's a good place to be right now, especially if you're considering it a transition period, which I know it's not a personnel transition period to the extent of other teams, but it is still a monumental movement from Sexton onwards. And you know, Mike Catt will be leaving at the end of this year, and you'll see what happens there and develops there. And there's so much positivity. There's, you know, a conveyor belt of talent coming from South Dublin, and that's always interesting to see. That the under 20s team, they look unbelievable. There's some seriously good players in the provinces. The provinces aren't maybe doing as well this season, but they're not terrible. And, you know, Munster are league champions at the moment, and they've got some Irish qualified players getting picked up by France. So we got an abundance of talent knocking around the provinces at the moment.
Oh, we're going to get to that, Sam. Put you up with that. I think my summary would be, to me, it's like that was sport. Everyone was tipping Ireland. Like, you would have got amazing odds on the Italy-England double on Saturday. Like, that's, you know, that's just the way it is. Nobody saw that coming. If I'm Andy Farrell, and if I think he's the person that I think he is, he's going to be, like, secretly probably really happy, because now he can use this as another kind of just reminder that we can only get better and we need to get better. You know, winning a lot can promote complacency, and I agree with you, Westy. An Irish team that I didn't think would be complacent, they just didn't look. It's not that they didn't look awful. Well, they did, at times they did, but like they just didn't look like their ruthless selves. And I do think sometimes a team struggles with, especially when they're expected to win big, they just don't perform. Like, I mean, they played well against that France team. I know you said, Sam, it wasn't a great France team, but they were probably really gunning for that game. Do you know what I mean? And I always think back to the South Africa group game at the World Cup. Like, that was peak Ireland. And it was because they knew they were going to be in for an absolute battle. And maybe they didn't view the English team that way. And that's a mistake by them, by all accounts. I didn't think the Twickenham factor would be as big as it was. But again, I think those Twickenham fans can, when it's going bad, will turn on them quick. But when it's going good and they're in with a chance, they really do raise their voice, and the atmosphere was good. But by no means is this a bad Irish team now. You know, Peter Mahoney's obviously come under criticism because of his penalty. It was a silly yellow card by all means. But like, Peter Mahoney is still a fantastic rugby player and an amazing leader of this team, and will continue to do so until he's decided not to. But let's not just panic about this just yet. But and again, credit to the English team. You could see in Ben Earl's post-match conference, he was practically holding back tears. Jamie George's mother passed, was it 2 weeks ago or during the week, whatever it was, and Jamie George has become a player that I've really grown to like, and again, I struggled with that in my own coming to terms with that a couple of years ago, but seems like a really good lad, fantastic player, and you know, I was happy for some of those English players, not Dan the country Cole. As a whole, but Dan Punk. Cole looking sexy as always, no doubt about that. But yeah, I thought Sam Underhill as well was fantastic for England, a reminder of how good he is. Also, Bundy Aki was fantastic, I thought, for Ireland, continues to be fantastic for Ireland, so credit to him. But yeah, we'll move on from that game to the final game, which was yesterday. Wales hosted France. France come out on top, 45 points to 24. But Westy, closer game than the scoreline suggests. So 20-17 at half time. Wales were still in this game for a long period of time, but then France kind of put on the afterburners towards the end. But your views on this game?
Yeah, I thought it was a really good game. I thought it was a fantastic weekend, as you guys already said. For the Six Nations, it was a fantastic weekend of games. Either way, I was really impressed with Wales in the first half, to be honest. Two kind of breakaway tries, but two really well-taken tries. You know, they saw a half gap and managed to get through. And I think it was Rio Dyer and Thomas Williams. Maybe Thomas Williams was the second half. But yeah, really strong from them. I think the French bench was probably what made it. You know, only if you look at the timeline to see that, you know, France were in three tries in the last 15-20 minutes. And that really makes the difference. I think they probably made a smart move during the week of kind of doubling down on youth and a lot of new caps in there. I thought Legarrick at scrum half was unbelievable. Biel Barre and Barry as well in the back line were fantastic. I heard it was really interesting during the week to hear that I think Cameron Wokey wasn't picked to start and refused to travel as the 24th man, so went back to play to Racing. When I heard that during the week, I thought, like, it really reminded me of the old France, because the old France was always a team very separate to, let's say, French rugby, in that players would have always been a lot more invested in playing for their clubs than for the national team. And you'd see that when they'd lose the first game of the Six Nations, the second game they wouldn't really be arsed, because they'd be like, oh, this is over, you know, they didn't really care. I thought that was one of the great things that Galtier did to begin with, was he kind of reinvented the national team, as, you know, by picking these young players and getting them invested and getting involved. He built on the promise of winning a home World Cup, and that didn't happen. But So when I heard that during the week, I was like, oh, this is typical. This is exactly what I thought would happen, and that France have lost. The players are losing that air of the national team and would rather go play club. But credit where credit's due, I think the young players of France really stepped up. I can't remember the name of that prop that they brought on. It was, I think they said he was 23 stone. Like, it was unbelievable to see a player of that size coming on and hungry for work as well. So I think France will be definitely frustrated with the tries they conceded in the first half and some of the tries in the second half. There was a lot of kind of breakaways, as I said earlier, by Wales, some very soft shoulders, some very soft defending. But at the end of the day, France drew it together quite strong. At the end of the be bench, really made the impact. And I think I've been crediting Wales all World Cup with how strong they came into every second half, how well equipped they seemed to, whatever their team talks were doing at half time, really kind of seemed to give them what they needed to get into the game. And France can turn it on its head, really, and capitalize an area where they're going to be strong, where France is always going to have depth, and they were able to kind of impose that on a still growing, kind of still young Wales team.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Sam, what was your thoughts?
I think I don't know how to feel about Wales. That's my biggest takeaway from this whole Six Nations. They're sitting dead last. In you would be well in within your right to look at them and say, look, they're shit. They're not doing well at all. They're all over the place. They brought Gatland back because they were in turmoil. The whole place is rotten from the head down. It's Wales in general is just an absolute mess. But I appreciate what Gatland's kind of done to an extent. I know the Welsh fans aren't overly chuffed with him being back and how he's been since he came back, but he's gotten rid and he's doing kind of drastic overhauls and he's bringing through, like Wesley said, a lot of good young lads that I think look like they have something about them. It's not been there for full games yet, but if you are going for complete overhaul, bringing through youth, bringing through a whole new era of play. Yeah, you probably don't go back to your coach who was a coach for 20 years and try and do it that way. But he's what's in place now. And I think he's gotten, there's a lot of experience left that Welsh team just before and after the World Cup. So I feel like this is the sort of game that I'm going, like, I don't think that they would have had eyes on it at the start of the tournament. Wales are very proud, but they'll be realistic in their views. I think that the entire tournament's been a bit disappointing for them, but if they are looking to build something for the next couple of years, and if they're doing so with limited resources because of what's happening in Welsh rugby, I don't think they're in a bad place. I think that they look like they're in a terrible place. And if they lose to Italy, they look like they're in a horrendous place. But I've seen enough about them, and a lot of those players have impressed me for periods of the game that I'm kind of going, yeah, okay, I think that they're probably in a better place than they look. And France are probably in a worse place than they look. And it's kind of a funny situation because France got a big win there, but they've looked shocking all tournament as well. So it's a very strange scenario, and the Six Nations after a World Cup kind of gives you that opportunity to be a bit mental. So the whole game and the result didn't surprise me, but where Wales are at in this Six Nations, I think it's maybe not telling the full story of what they're doing.
Yeah, I think next year will be big for both these teams because, as like I have buddies have said, France, like what happens next for them, and Wales. Yeah, I don't know. Gatland, just he doesn't fill me with confidence at any stage. Even when he does his press conference, you're always like, what? Like, he's normally either throwing someone under the bus or whatever. It's not good. Well, speaking of France, they have a new squad member as of yesterday, and Irish Twitter responded as it always does, which is magnificently. Antoine Frisch got called up to the French training squad. So, first of all, congratulations to him. He was qualified for like four different countries, isn't he? He's qualified for a lot
Ireland,
of
England,
countries.
and France. Yeah.
Sorry, just a three. Okay. I know he had expressed interest for playing with Ireland, but obviously, when France come knocking and you're not in an Irish squad, you'd be foolish, I suppose, not to go, especially if you have eligibility for that country. Munster fans, let's preface this. Obviously, like every team, it's a small section of the fans that are the loudest and most obnoxious and most annoying. But they're very upset at our
That
I
would be
review.
me if it was us. That's all I'm
Yeah,
saying.
of course. Yeah, I would look to Sam for that as well if this was Connacht. But yeah, Munster fans are not happy that Frisch, because the chances are, obviously, if he does get capped, chances of him staying with Munster are pretty much zero. And they wanted him to be capped. They are very upset at IRFU. They're very upset at Nusafora. That there's obviously this agenda against Munster and agenda against Munster players and whatnot. So I have my views on this, but Westy, I'll throw to you first. You're a calmer head than me. You don't like having arguments on Twitter, stuff like that. So your take on this.
Like being on Twitter, I'm only really honest to help promote the podcast with my 3 tweets a year.
And your sick Six Nations poems. Don't worry, don't forget about those.
Oh, I didn't do it this year. No. What was the question again? How do I feel about Anton Frisch going to the French train?
Before I go, you know, biblical, what do you want to say?
Yeah, I think the man is French. He's perfectly entitled to play for France if he wants. You know, he's born in France. His parents are French. He came up through French systems, you know. Probably was a dream of his from a young lad to play for France. I think his grandmother is Irish, if I'm not mistaken there. So, although I'm sure...
England, though. I think he actually grew up in England. I think he's got a bit of an English accent. I think, yeah, I was reading it. I think his grandmother is English, his mom, or his grandmother's Irish, his mom is Irish, but from England. His dad is French, born in France, moved to England, and his brother still lives in like Guildford or something. That's what I got from the gist of when I was trying to work out how French he was.
He went to Loughborough or some university, someone told me, yeah. But I mean, he did. He still, you know, he played for other clubs in France. My point is that, like, it's pretty French, is all I'm trying to say. So if he wants to play for France, then I'm playing for France. Again, it's not like, again, you said all that is England, right? He has a lot of connections to England. It's not like he spent large amounts of his childhood in Ireland. Maybe he did. Maybe he has cousins here. I don't know. But what I'm saying is you can't punish a fella if his dreams growing up weren't to play for Ireland. His dreams were probably going to have to play for France. Okay, Sam has made it sound that everyone's dreams to play for England someday, maybe, but... it's not mine.
Probably Louis Linus as well, but like, whatever.
But yeah, look, it's up to him at the end of the day. He was called into an emerging Ireland squad. They've seen him play. It's not like he's never been looked at in terms of Ireland. You've got three of, I don't know, is it too much to say three of the best centres in the world in the lads that are there? Like, obviously, I'm really biased when it comes to Bundy. Ringrose is still only 29, despite what everyone was saying that all of our centres were in their 30s. They're not. Ringrose is 29. Henshaw's 30. But they're still in the prime of their lives, really. Now, I know some of them had injury problems and stuff, but like, you don't look at too many rugby players who are 29, 30 and say, God, you're dust, mate. Like, you know, players would be hoping to get a couple of years out of it at least. But he went to the Emerging Ireland Tour and was a fantastic player. I think they probably would have been looking at him with the eyes of bringing him to Ireland set up eventually. But at the same time, Andy Farrell has never been one to just dole out caps for no reason. And you know, we have had the odd conspiracy conversation after a few pints that the only reason Jack Carrigan played against France 2 years ago was to stop him going to America. But I don't know if we really believe, I don't really believe that's true. I would hate it if we played that type of game where we gave John Klein 20 minutes just so he wouldn't go to South Africa. Like, the point is to develop players and to enjoy a game and to make money as well. But, you know, I know obviously you're going to bend and twist the rules and try and make things work in your favour, but I would like to see him, you know, given a cap gratuitously just to stop him going somewhere else. And, you know, as well, he doesn't have to go and play for France right now. He can say no and stay in Ireland and pursue the Ireland dream. But by all accounts, I don't know, but it sounds like he's taking the option. This is a risk you take when you sign someone who has multiple options to play for different teams. Now, maybe it did appear that his chances for France or England were behind him, but maybe at one point in his life he thought he would play for Ireland, but he has every right to take an opportunity now that comes up in front of him. I don't know what the complaint of Munster fans is, really, that he wasn't capped early enough. I mean, Ollie Yeager got a cap after 3 games. Like, that's not going to happen to everybody, lads. Like, you have to kind of, we have to see sense at some point. It's disappointing, I think, to see him go, because I think he is a really good talent. I think he could have brought something to an Ireland team. I might have brought him in, maybe. I don't know. But I'm also not shocked that he wasn't. I think a lot is being made of a man's decision to go and play for a different country that he's perfectly entitled to play for. Like, it's not, it'll have repercussions in the Munster squad, but it's not anybody else's decision when he does.
You know, Westy, perfectly logical argument there. There's absolutely no place for that on Twitter right now, so stay off it, okay? Stay off it. Sam, again, your thoughts on this?
There's a load of different thoughts. My one thing is that it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to go. It's probably likely that he will, because I don't see France continuously picking a player that's based outside of France if they do want him in their squad long term. But what will happen is the same with the Orgies Nyman John Klein thing, is one of Nankville and Frisch will have to go. They won't be made to get rid of both. I actually think Nankville probably goes anyway because he was close enough to the All Blacks before the World Cup. He was in that All Blacks 15 that played Japan just before, their kind of wider training squad. So I think he probably goes at the end of next year, and that will be doubly a blow, and Munster fans will not be happy about that. And they'll probably come calling for Hugh Gavin or Kyle Ford or one of them, and you know, say, oh, we want them. And that's the general way that these conversations work. They have Sean O'Brien in there. Dermot Kilgallen has played 13 as well, and he's going there. So they've got options. I'm in agreement with Westy. I think it's his decision. I don't think if Andy Farrell had been on the phone to him recently and been like, look, we have these centres, but two of them are going to be retired in the next couple of years, and you're next in line, I really want you, you know, that's why you're just outside my wider training squad, my 42 men that I brought to a 6-week training camp before the World Cup, or my 30 something men that I had before the Six Nations. If you're just outside that, but I really want you, and if you're keen, hang on tight. He would have just said no to France's call. I'm sure, like, you know, plenty of these players, like the likes of John Porch, rumour has it, nearly got a call off Australia when they were touring Europe 2 years ago off the back of some good form here. It didn't happen, but those conversations happen between agents, players, management, I'm sure, all the time. So if Andy Farrell had indicated to Frisch that he was close and he wanted to play for Ireland, that would be there, and he'd rightfully be able to say no. But I just don't know who you brought him in for if you were going to give him one of these kind of capture caps or these gratuitous caps, as Westy said. You know, he's not better than the three lads. He's, you know, probably a better 23rd man option than Stuart McCluskey, just because he can play 12 or 13, and McCluskey's pretty much just a 12. But Farrell has liked McCluskey and has brought him and has played him as the 23rd man when needs be, or started him when needs be. Then behind them, you have Frawley, who is coming out more as a, you know, he's probably going to play a bit more of 12 because of Jack Crowley's emergence, and he's a good squad player. You have Osborne, you have Jimmy O'Brien, who's, you know, he was a couple of months ago the best player in Ireland's future, and he's probably got a 13 position in him. You've got James Hume, who has caps, so there's plenty of players there. Farrell hasn't really indicated that he wants Frisch. If he did, he would have been in that 42 men that trained before the World Cup, just given how good his form was last year. You know, he was phenomenal for Munster, and he is a phenomenal player, and it would be a massive blow for them to lose him. I personally would have probably had him ahead of McCluskey in squads, but that's my decision. You know, Farrell hasn't done that. They've seen him emerge in Ireland. They know what he's about. They've seen him week in, week out, and they've not capped him. He's also not a 22-year-old. If he was like a Jamie Osborne and you go, oh yeah, I'll capture him because you've got 4, 8, you know, 12 good years ahead of him. But he's not. You know, he's like a year younger than Ringrose. Is he 28 in June? You know, Ringrose is 30 next year. So he's a year and a half younger than Ringrose. He's got probably half a World Cup cycle more than Ringrose does. So it's, I don't see, like, I feel like it's passion on Munster's fans part being angry about it. I would be aggrieved. I felt similar when Henshaw went to Leinster, his Ireland prospects were there. When Alton Delan didn't stay with us because he was out of the Ireland picture, there was a big point then when Finlay Beelan was seriously considering leaving because he was out of the Ireland picture. He's got himself back into it. And if that had happened, I would have been salty. Tom Daly never got a cap. He was in an Ireland squad. I was salty about that because I'm a passionate fan and I understand Munster's passion, but it's not Andy Farrell's job to cap players, to keep them in the provinces, to fuck over players' careers for one cap. Like Westy said, you wouldn't want to do that to a person. That's not a nice thing to do. It's not a good thing to do. And if he wants to play for France and he's the opportunity to play for France, and if he doesn't seem to have any indication the opportunity to play for Ireland is immediately available to him, fair play to him and go to it. Like, I don't understand how this is new Sephora or Andy Farrell's fault.
It's also, like, would it not be a little bit surprising if he, like, now he will play now for France, and I'll eat my words. He's just called into the training squad. It's no guarantee he gets a game next week. Like, they'll have a pretty big game against England, Le Crunch. Like, they won't be taking any, I don't see them taking massive risks. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's just called into the training squad. Like, it means something, but it doesn't mean he's automatically capped. And look, he could be announced to start before this podcast comes out. I'm going to flick a right fool. But, you know, it just means you're showing interest in him. And I also want to point out, if we're going to get angry, I'm going to bring back up the whole AJ McGinty thing, because that was bollocks. We lost an Irish player because he was capped for USA after winning the league. So, anyway.
Yeah, but also, like, even if he does start for France, it's a different coach. It's a different coaching staff. It's a different way of playing rugby. It doesn't mean that Farrell wants him in his system. And that's what I get annoyed about. Same with the John Klein thing. It's like, Farrell, like, it's not like Farrell was like, oh, I didn't even know he was available to us. Oh, yeah, that's news to me. Like, he knows he's there. Like, he's very aware of him, but he obviously just doesn't want him. And that is Farrell's amazing, you know, ability, and that's his privilege as the national head coach. And
when, when Ross Maloney plays for England, because apparently he's moving to Bath and English qualified, when he plays for England, no one's going to bat an eyelid, because he wasn't good enough to get in the squad. He was an amazing player for Leinster, but he wasn't good enough to get in the squad. And that's pretty much the same circumstance.
Well, like, that's like, it's this is, and again, this is what annoys me about the Munster fans. Again, it's the Munster fans who are crying. It's the entitlement. It's like, oh, we deserve all the best players. And if he does leave, they'll probably sign a great player too. And it's just, that's what I give out, is the lack of awareness, the lack of reality for the other teams. Like, given out that international teams have had more cap players from Munster than in the last couple of years than Ireland. It's like, Crowley's straight in. Lachman's getting caps. Jaeger signed a 3-year contract and has got a cap already. And everyone says, boy, deserved. He's done nothing. Like, nothing.
Rich also signed a 3-year contract. Like, they're given these things. Just because it didn't work out doesn't mean that that's on anyone else. Like, you know, Frisch was given a 3-year contract, which was rare at the time. He was in, like, the Bristol kind of reserves and saw his chance here. That was, you know, the Zeebo contract. There's loads there. It's, you said it earlier, it's that meme with the Mel Gibson talking to Jesus. That's how I feel as a Connacht fan. And we've also just lost our last Munster listener, by the way.
Well, no, it's, well, again, if there are a Munster fan who feels so agree about this, then good luck to you. We don't particularly care. But there's loads of sound Munster fans as well. I want to make that clear. But like, it's this, yeah, it's this, like, oh, they're saying like, oh, you know, do you know how hard it is to lose all these players? Like, do you know how hard it is that you're signing these quality players? Like, that doesn't happen all the time in every club. Like, Connacht aren't signing these quality players all the time. Do you know what I mean? That these international caliber players. And if you're on top of the agenda, there are a few. We've just mentioned all the caps. Simon Zeebo, half his contract was paid for to be heavily involved in Six Nations. And he is on a fucking couch in an RTE studio giving analysis. And no Munster fans bringing that up, you know, as a IRFU agenda. And it's just, they love to moan. And that's why I'm nicknaming them Moanster from now on. They're not Munster, they're Moanster. And I think that I'm going to stick with that from now on. And I'm sick of it. This entitlement, get over. And all their arguments are getting given out about Leinster. I was like, I'm not even a Leinster fan. Why? But like, you're making Leinster look likable. That's how bad it is. Poor Ulster. Ulster can't get a look in on the Irish team. Never mind. Like, at least we have two players from Connacht. Poor Ulster up there have nothing.
Stephen Kitchoff, though. Stephen Kitchoff in a plastic pitch, man.
Yeah, they've got Stephen. Like, again, imagine if Connacht signed someone of that caliber. I mean, we'd shit ourselves with happiness. And it just doesn't happen. And Munster over here complaining because Frisch is signing playing with France. Oh, it's honestly astonishing, the lack of reality in some people. And just the entitlement. It really annoys me, the entitlement. But anyway, I needed that. I've been sitting on that rant for a while. That was really good, lads. I appreciate you listening to that. But yeah, the Zeebo stuff, that pissed me off when that happened too. So I'm glad we finally got that out in the open. But anything I didn't cover there on that.
If we could sign Frisch, because he's a non-Irish qualified, they don't let Munster keep him, but he moves to us. It would just, that would probably, Limerick would probably explode. The people of Cork would cut Cork away from the island and just push off.
Yeah, 100%. I did enjoy James Gortshire, you know, the usual troll that he is, but he was saying, like, if Cillian Murphy was from Leinster, he'd have 5 Oscars at this stage, not just the one. So you got to give credit where credit's due there. He just lives for that sort of shit, so fair play to him. But yeah, we had to talk about that because it's been Ireland Twitter has been crazy today. It's been very enjoyable, I must say. But yeah, that will go on for another couple of days, I'm sure. We'll wrap it there, boys. We covered all of the action, we covered all the hot topics, and we'll be back next week to recap the final round. Ireland, a win at all against Scotland, will secure a back-to-back Six Nations Championship, which is fantastic. But still, England can win it, Scotland can win it. I think, can France win it? I think they can, but they'd need to score an outrageous amount of points. But still, all to play for, which is exciting going to the last round. And then the URC will be back and we can talk about that. But until then, boys, appreciate you coming on as always. And we'll catch you next week.
Night-night.